With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. This is Nick Wright. Chris Broussard is joining us this morning. We are down here in Miami for Super Bowl week. We came here to talk football, but in life, sometimes plans change, and unfortunately, today is one of those days. We are continuing to process the news of Kobe Bryant's death. His reach so much farther than just basketball. As a father and husband, an NBA legend, an Oscar winner, so much more. Nick, I know this was hard on you. It was hard on every sports fan. How are you processing all of it this morning now that you've had a second to let it sink in?
Yeah, I think processing is the right word, and I don't think it's sunk in. This is the first one of these for me as far as, unlike Broussard, I had no personal relationship with Kobe Bryant. And I've never had a celebrity death that registered with me the way I know so many have with other people. I remembered the outpouring when Michael Jackson passed, and I'll be totally candid, I didn't understand it. I understood people appreciated his music and appreciated his career, but I didn't understand the grief people were feeling, and now I do. I am still in a stage of disbelief, Chris. When the news came across my Twitter feed, as I think with so many people, I said, well, it can't be right. And then as the news seemingly only got sadder and sadder, and it was confirmed, and then we also know his 13-year-old daughter passed away along with 7 other people, I don't even know how to wrap my arms around it. And I am in true shock that Kobe Bryant, 1978 to 2020, that we are not going to see Kobe Bryant sitting courtside at Laker games when he's old and gray, and that we're not going to get to see this next phase of his life that he seemed to be so excitedly embracing over the last few years of his retirement.
Yeah, like everyone, I mean, I was in shock. I was actually in the air when I found out. I was flying to Chicago and then en route to here. And somebody had texted me, OMG. And I shot back a question mark and they said, Kobe died. And I was like, this can't be Kobe Bryant. And I text Kobe Bryant question mark. And they said, yeah. And I began seeing other stuff because we were about to land in the news. And it was like a gut punch. And as you said, Nick, I mean, I've seen tragedies. I was a very little kid when Roberto Clemente died of a plane crash. Thurman Munson, I was older and could understand when he died with the Yankees. Magic Johnson, when he came down, got HIV.
People thought he was going to die in short order.
And Roy Halladay, even more recently, the great pitcher. But I haven't experienced anything like this in the world of sports in my lifetime. This is the most tragic for me that I've ever seen. And there are a lot of reasons to be devastated. But one was that Kobe had transitioned so smoothly to life after basketball, which surprised me because he has such tunnel vision as a player that I actually was one that thought he might have trouble transitioning because basketball was so much a part of his life and really was his life. But I haven't seen a transition this smooth.
Better.
business venture. He's a venture capitalist, won an Oscar, you know, for his movie Dear Basketball, best-selling author for the Mamba Mentality book, and a family man, a tremendous family man. That's why we didn't see him at as many Laker games, because he was spending time coaching his kids. Ironically, the last time I saw him was about a year ago at the mall in Newport Beach, where he lived, and he was with his family. And we spoke for about 10 minutes. He seemed so comfortable and so just comfortable in life after basketball. And so that's one of the reasons of many that is most devastating to me.
Well, Jenna, what Broussard talked about right there was my immediate reaction once you start to process it is there are certain guys who you really do worry about once their career's over. No matter how much money or fame or accolades they have, what will they do? And will they always be trying to reclaim their athletic fame? And I would have thought Kobe was going to be tops on that list because he was such an amazing competitor. And he seemed to have just an almost animalistic need to compete, to defeat you, to have there be some scoreboard that he was on the top of. But instead, he went a totally different way. He totally threw himself into, it would appear, the things he maybe always had a passion for, but deprived himself of because he was so focused on singular greatness as a basketball player. And so he gets into films. He's always reading a different book. And he gets his sports fix through his daughters. And that's the part that for everyone, to me, is so jarring about it. And it makes you, honestly, reconsider all your decisions. It makes you, like all of us, spend time away from our families for a career we're very focused on. You know, Broussard, if I may, you know, you're bi-coastal. Right. And I spent a year and a half living in a different city than my wife and kids and going back and forth. And it makes you just think, like, you know, does any of it matter other than the things that actually matter? And Kobe was finally getting to do the things for him
that actually matter.
And to have that stripped from him and selfishly for all of us to lose getting to see what the next 50 years of a savant, a brilliant person that was trilingual, person that could show the ability to get to the top of multiple fields, what he would have done, the things he was already trying to do for women's basketball, it is a tragedy unlike I can remember in the sports world in my lifetime.
So for me, I was at another network when the news of the Michael Jackson passing happened, and I was just starting my career when Princess Di tragically was killed. Those were the only two that I can remember that had such an incredible global reach. But we didn't live really in the time of as intense social media as we do now, where you get the immediate impact of how much Kobe Bryant has touched everyone. I mean, far from just basketball, you scroll down any of your feeds and he has affected just about everyone. And I know you both touched on it, but my question to you is, how much bigger was Kobe Bryant than just the basketball accolades, which in and of itself are tremendously impressive?
Well, first of all, basketball-wise, on a world stage, he was as big as anyone. Because in Asia, he was arguably the biggest NBA player there. You know, so yep. Basketball-wise, I mean, his impact is second to none. And that includes Michael Jordan and LeBron James as far as worldwide prominence and being a face of the game. But, you know, Nick kind of touched on it. A lot of athletes, even if they go on to do some really good things after their playing career, the best part, at least to the public, of their life was going to be their sports career. I'm not sure that was going to be the case with Kobe Bryant because he's only been retired, what, 3 or 4 years? 3 years?
3.5 years.
And he's already done so many tremendous things And so what he was going to do, I mean, I don't know if he would have ever delved into politics or whatever. He obviously was intelligent enough, was well-respected enough to do things like that. But he was going to do some tremendous things off the court. And again, that is one of the things that makes it so tragic in my mind.
And I don't know if this makes it sadder or makes it, I don't know, more palatable, probably somewhere in between. When he was in the public, right in the public eye Saturday night, the night before, because the Lakers were in Philly and LeBron passed him in the scoring list. And so what you saw from Kobe with his tweet after the game, with Bill Plaschke in the LA Times wrote about today, was Kobe was truly at peace and was no longer engaging in the petty stuff that I find myself engaging in all the time of this player versus that player. He was so confident and satisfied with what he had accomplished in basketball that he had, I don't want to say removed himself from the fray, but he was wanting now just to lift others up and to move on to other phases. So you're glad he got that piece, but it is for Kobe's family, for the families of the other people on that airplane or on that helicopter, for everyone, it is the type of thing, and this is not, I'm just going to be totally candid, these 3 hours today, it's just going to be, I don't know, soul searching. But it's the type of thing I'll talk with Broussard off the air about, in that Broussard is a man of deep, deep faith. To be totally candid, I am not so much. And it is the type of thing that makes you question either. Like, and that is the impact of something like this. You either say, like, how is this fair? Or this is where you grab someone's hand who has that type of faith and you say, this is how you get through these types of things. And God willing, I hope those his three other daughters and his wife have that support structure around them, because this is unbelievable.
Well, as you can imagine, the news has struck so many throughout the sports world as well. This from Shaquille O'Neal. There are no words to express the pain I'm going through now with this tragic and sad moment of losing my niece Gigi and my friend, my brother, my partner in winning championships, my dude, my homie. I love you and will miss you, will be missed. My condolences go out to the Bryant family and the families of the other passengers on board. I'm sick right now. He then added, Kobe was so much more than an athlete. He was a family man. That was what we had most in common. We love our families. Whenever we got together, I would hug his children like they were my own, and he would embrace my kids like they were his. His baby girl, Gianna, was born on the same day as my youngest daughter. I miss you already, brother. This is truly unbelievable. Everyone, please keep the Bryants in your prayers. Rest in peace. We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has now teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, so you have less stress, so you perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40. We are back here live from Miami. We're here for Super Bowl 54. Today, however, we are remembering the life of Kobe Bryant, who passed away at the age of 41 yesterday. As you can imagine, there was plenty of reaction around the league. Here was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
It's very difficult for me to put in words how I feel about the loss of Kobe Bryant. As a young boy, I met him when he was 11 or 12 years old. I was friends with his dad, Joe. We were former adversaries. Joe played for the 76ers, but he was a good friend and someone that I shared a friendship. And it's hard for me to understand now how this is affecting Joe and his wife. So to Kobe's family, I want to send my most sincere and heartfelt regrets and prayers, and my thoughts are with you guys. Kobe was an incredible family man. He loved his wife and daughters. He was an incredible athlete and a leader in a lot of ways. He inspired a whole generation of young athletes. He was one of the first ones to leave high school and come to the NBA and do so well, dominating the game and becoming one of the best scorers that the Los Angeles Lakers has ever seen. I had the privilege of being there when he scored his 81-point game, and it was something that I will always remember as one of the highlights of the things that I have learned and observed in sports. Kobe, my thoughts are with you, absolutely. Rest in peace, young man. This loss is, it's just hard to comprehend. Go with God.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the passing of Kobe Bryant. We are now joined by Doug Gottlieb. Gottlieb, when you heard the news, you jumped on a red eye from LA. You made sure you were here. What was your reaction when you heard about all of this?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm crestfallen. I've got to know Kobe after his career. We live in the same area. Our daughters went to school together for a couple years, and one of the other families, the Altabellis, John's a legendary junior college baseball coach.
And one of the families that was tragically killed.
Yes, and his wife, Carrie, and they leave two kids. Christina Mauser is a PE teacher at their school. She leaves three kids. I mean, it's a terrible local tragedy. And my daughter's friend, Alyssa, was obviously on that plane. And so first you're dealing with, you know, I have a 13-year-old daughter. It's enough problems in middle school. Now all of a sudden you're dealing with death. And then it's Kobe. And I think you said it before, Chris, the timing of what happened the night before. Like, and LeBron was even talking about it. LeBron talked for a couple minutes, and it's really interesting. He kind of let us in that, you know, back when Kobe was playing in the All-Star game, his hometown of Philadelphia, he had LeBron, he and LeBron got together with Maverick Carter.
They drove to go see him.
Yeah, and he was getting ready to play Oak Hill the next day, and Kobe gave him his shoes, and LeBron wore them even though they were size too small. Right? So to go from LeBron passing him in Philadelphia and becoming third all time, and Kobe has handled this so well, like as well as you possibly can. And then it pops up on your phone, your daughter's crying, and you don't know what's going on. And then you just understand the magnitude. And I think the fact that we had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar right there, like this is, NBA stars are not like NFL stars, right? Like NBA stars seem to live forever. And Jordan's still alive.
They gave out the first MVP in 1956. As of yesterday morning, only Wilt Chamberlain and Moses Malone were the MVPs that were not still with us. And the fact that it's now three and Kobe's one of them, it speaks to that point. We were talking about this before the show. Bill Russell has seemed like the oldest man in the room for my entire life, and you still see him every NBA Finals. Like, you're absolutely... Moses was sudden, right. Wilt was older, but we thought we were going to have 50 more years of Kobe Bryant in our lives.
And Chris and I, we've talked about this even going back to when he was playing. A lot of people were worried about Kobe. Like,
right.
Because Kobe cannot be a GM. He cannot be a coach, right? Like, his demands on people in terms of their work ethic is beyond what normal people are really even capable of. So we're like, what else? And he did find this. I mean, he was really into coaching the Mamba girls. Like, he's sending me videos of triangle and some of the drills they're doing, and you know, they're practicing 5 days a week. And then he had his empire. But so my initial reaction, I was just crestfallen for all these Newport families. And then you start to understand the magnitude of NBA superstars don't die. And then the story itself, the whole thing is, you cannot write a script like this from the airball his freshman year in the playoffs. I mean, rookie year, yep, in the playoffs, to becoming seen as the greatest closer. You know, the injuries, Colorado, becoming this family man, Mamba out, and now having an Academy Award. Like, right. It's the most remarkable tale I can think of for an NBA player, and unlike so many of his contemporaries, gone way too soon.
Yeah, Bill Plaschke, the longtime columnist for the LA Times, and his career at the LA Times basically mirrored Kobe's career with the Lakers.
Plaschke started 2 months before Kobe's first game.
And he wrote yesterday in his column, one of the lines was, Kobe does not die. Like, this can't be true. Kobe doesn't die. And we know he's a basketball immortal, but that was part of my thinking when I heard the news, like, wait a minute, this can't be true. Like, Kobe Bryant is one of those handful of players that you just expected to always be there, to always be in the fabric of sports and basketball. And I'm going to be honest, like, I think one of the things I'm going to try to start applying more to my life is something that I look at Kobe as having, and that is, and I think anyone in any field of endeavor should learn this from Kobe. He did nothing just for the heck of it. He did nothing just to get through it. Oh, I've got to do this. When he played basketball, it was, I'm playing to be the best ever, or at least the best I can be. I remember seeing him, like, when one of his new models of his sneaker would come out. He's like, you got my new shoe? You got my new shoe yet? Or when the Muse came out in his Showtime documentary. We used to email every so often, and like he moved around a bit as a kid. I moved around a bit as a kid. Sometimes we were both one of the few African Americans in our areas. So we kind of talked a little bit about that over email. And he was like, you're going to love the Muse. That's because of that. Like, he took so much pride in everything he did, whether it was his shoes, whether it was his game, whether it was the stuff he did after, you know, off the court, the Showtime documentary, and so on and so forth. I'm really going to try to apply that to my life. Don't be mediocre in anything. Always try to be the best.
I think it's an amazing lesson that a lot of people say, and very few people actually do. Kobe, we had proof positive evidence he was actually doing it by what he did post-career. But your point about what Plaschke wrote, Kobe doesn't die, I think this is one of the reasons it's resonating so much because he's a global icon. You could argue he's the most popular player globally the NBA's ever had. Right. Like, when we look at the NBA today, and we talked about it Friday, four of the starting All-Stars, Cameroon, Greece, Nigeria via Greece, right, and Slovenia, the way the NBA just became truly a global game is in large part because those kids grew up idolizing Kobe. But so there's that part of it. The other part of it is this. It makes us all feel like could be us. If Kobe Bryant can die in a helicopter crash along with his daughter and those seven other people that Doug, you know, had a relationship with and whose lives are just as valuable as Kobe's, then there's any of us. And it makes, I think we all know we're going to die,
yeah,
but none of us ever actually believe it. Or I think maybe that's just me. Like, you know it's true, but it's hard to actually believe. And then when you see Kobe Bryant died, it makes all of us question our own mortality to that degree.
The popularity is fascinating because, Chris, you probably test this. Most guys didn't like him when he played in his prime. He didn't have a lot of friends in the NBA. Late in his NBA career, he tried to start befriending guys, and guys were like, what is the deal with Kobe, right? Where now he's friendly Kobe or whatever. But if you pull the current NBA players, he's their Jordan.
Yes.
He's their Jordan,
it's great,
right?
And
Iverson's probably a close second, and maybe part of it is they didn't live with it, whatever. He's also, you know, he's going to go down as the last of the mid-range guys, the last of the ISO guys. You know, he's a very unique figure. Remember, he wanted out of L.A. He was going to be traded. Mm-hmm. And then, the Bulls couldn't pull it off. And he ends up reinvesting. They get Phil Jackson out of retirement after ripping him in a book.
They get power.
The whole thing is nuts. And yet he's gone, so he can't. We're left to tell all these stories.
But we could do 3 hours of a show based solely on what Kobe Bryant did on the court. And how few people do we know who could reach the pinnacle of their craft, and yet we could spend hours and hours talking about what they did outside of their craft. And I think that's what makes this such a unique individual and obviously such a tragic passing.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think his mental legacy, the legacy he leaves for people mentally, yeah, is as big as the legacy he's left physically. And you mentioned it, Doug, like a lot of players may not have liked him when he played. Kobe grew up so much differently than your average NBA player. Again, in Italy, you know, he grew up there, and then he was in the suburbs in Philadelphia. And so I saw him, at least in my relationship with him, earlier in his career. I don't know if he was as comfortable in his skin, at least in that setting of the NBA, because he grew up so differently.
He wanted to be Jordan.
Right.
You know, he used to almost, I mean, he did the best Jordan imitation of anybody.
He was against Phoenix when he hit the game winner. He did the thing. Yeah. And then it only seemed to me later, really post the championships without Shaq, that he decided, instead of trying to be my best version of Michael Jordan, I'm going to be my best version of Kobe Bryant. And that then turned into also off the court.
Right.
It turned into winning an Academy Award and doing these things.
It was a succession of things. Remember, before he tore his Achilles tendon, that was a terrible basketball team that he single-handedly willed into the playoffs.
Yep.
Right? That was his. And then the year off, that he was at that school with his daughter serving lunches. And I thought that really, and it gave him time to think and think about what he wanted to do next. And that's when he kind of plotted this whole strategy, right, about being a global financial icon. And then he comes back, and he wasn't very good, but the 60 in the last night, right, and the speech, Mamba out, is, you know, it's Jeterian. It's like Derek Jeter. Those are the two guys. That's what we love.
All right, well, yesterday's news sent shockwaves far beyond the world of basketball. Tom Brady actually chimed in saying, "We miss you already, Kobe." Well, Barack Obama said Kobe was a legend on the court and just getting started in what would have been just as meaningful a second act. To lose Gianna is even more heartbreaking to us as parents. Michelle and I send love and prayers to Vanessa and the entire Bryant family on an unthinkable day. A life cut way too short.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
We are back here on First Things First, live in Miami for Super Bowl 54, but plans change, and today we are remembering the life of Kobe Bryant. Kobe's love of basketball transcended his sport, as evidenced by Brazilian soccer star Neymar, who flashed the number 24 after scoring a goal last night. Just one of the many international stars clearly touched by Kobe Bryant. And we are now joined by Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix. Chris, thanks so much for being with us. What was your reaction as you were watching and hearing everything unfold yesterday?
I mean, just incredulous like anything else. And you start to remember some of the experiences you had covering Kobe Bryant, the experience people told you about. I mean, the very first memory that came to mind, 2018, right? The Celtics are playing the Cavaliers in the conference finals, and in between games 2 and 3, Kobe comes out with a detail on Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
And if you remember that, there was like a 3-day gap between games 2 and 3 of that finals. And Tatum said that he watched that video like 100 times, like just kept watching it over and over again. And as the series went on, Celtics coaches would tell me that it seemed like Tatum was incorporating Kobe's notes in real time.
Right.
And they would grumble about it. They would just say, like, could you do this in the offseason? Can, you know, don't try to change your game in the middle of the conference finals. So Nick, you know, LeBron's last Eastern Conference championship, some of it has to do with Kobe. Right?
Well, you know, it's so funny you say that because and we can talk about this more later. One of the legends of Kobe and one of the way he'll be remembered is his rivalries that he seemed to put aside well before his fans or the opposing fans did. The Kobe versus Shaq, Kobe versus Michael, Kobe versus LeBron. And obviously when you say the LeBron, like I have a long history of when you stack those two guys up and compare them statistically being on one side of the ledger. But what no one can deny, no matter where they are, is, and Chris talks about this all the time, is the actual players looked at Kobe in a different light. I don't know if it's because LeBron seemed like someone who you couldn't emulate because so much of it was physicality, because Kobe was so graceful, for whatever it was, but for a lot of those players, and I say this with glowing respect for Kobe Bryant, it was to their detriment. Because you can't, if you try to paint like Picasso, you're just gonna have a bunch of splotches on the wall. And Kobe was the greatest bad shot maker ever.
Yep.
But if you were not Kobe, you're just taking bad shots. And so like you joke, like we saw it in real time. I don't think it's joking that Tatum all of a sudden, within a series, was like, Kobe said do this. And yeah, Kobe could do it. But that's why he's one of the eight greatest players ever. Kyrie, who left the stadium yesterday and couldn't play and loves and idolizes Kobe. It's guys trying to mimic something that seems like, well, if he could do it, why can't I? He's bigger than Kyrie, but he's not that much taller. He's not that much stronger. He can't jump that much higher. What? Because you're not Kobe. That's why you can't do it. And the game, Kobe was able to take all the things Michael did, figure out what he could do and couldn't do, and build his game from there. But that's a one of one historically. Like, I can't say it'll never happen again, but if it does, it'll be another guy who turns into one of the 10 greatest players ever.
That's what happens. When Michael Jordan, when he played, everybody focused on, that's when isolation basketball became in vogue after or during Jordan and after him, because guys were trying to emulate what Michael Jordan could do and they couldn't do it. Right. And it could hurt their games or hurt the game of basketball. Kobe's legacy or impact on the world of sports is unquestionably the killer instinct. And not that he was the first, but maybe because Michael Jordan and guys like that, but maybe because technology had increased so much and he had become this icon in Asia and worldwide that others before him couldn't. Maybe that's why, but whether you call it killer instinct, Mamba mentality, I mean, remember him. You mentioned Utah, the air boss. But remember him in the All-Star game as a 19-year-old waving off Karl Malone. Yeah. Karl Malone wanted to set a screen for him. He waves him off. I don't need it. I mean, that type of mentality. Kobe Bryant taking the last shot all the time.
Or a decade later in an All-Star game, challenging LeBron.
Right,
remember that?
Right,
like,
yes.
Getting after LeBron, you're scared more than a decade later, 12, 13 years later. Like, the relentless competitiveness combined with the fearlessness is how you become him.
And I think, wasn't it one All-Star game when Michael walked up to him and said, don't do this tonight. Like, this is not going to be, we're just playing a game. I don't want to see you try to go get 30 off. That's not going to happen.
That might have been Michael's last one.
It might have been. One of the last ones, for sure, there. On a larger scale, I think that Kobe is as responsible for the growth of the game globally as any player ever. You know, the 1992 Dream Team is widely viewed as the team that opened the door globally. So you had some international players coming in and out of the NBA, but it really created a viewership of the NBA it's never seen before. And all those young kids, while they first started watching Michael and those players in the 90s, they grew up watching Kobe. And in the late 1990s, early 2000s, there was a vacuum for star players. Like, when Michael left the stage, it was Allen Iverson for a hot minute. Then it was Tim Duncan, maybe. But it really was Kobe that people started watching. And as the game expanded to different areas of the globe, to China with Yao Ming in 2003, all across Europe over the decade later. They were watching Kobe Bryant. It was his jersey they were buying. It was him they were trying to emulate. So this global behemoth that the NBA has become today is as much Kobe's doing as anybody else.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think he had such a global reach, more so than other players who were equally as famous, if you will?
You know, it's a great question. And I've wondered the same thing, because Kobe isn't from humble beginnings like so many of the international players. I think part of it has to do with the fact he was the first high school to pro that wasn't a big. Like, Moses did it, Kevin Garnett did it, he was the first guard to say, I'm gonna go straight high school to pro. Pardon me. And I do wonder.
You're right. He actually was. Daryl Dawkins, Bill Willoughby. Yeah, he was the first guard.
He was the first guy that wasn't just like, well, I'm big enough already.
Right.
And I do wonder if you're Joel Embiid, who doesn't pick up basketball till you're almost a teenager, and you're in Cameroon, and you say, okay, well, this guy turned into, I'm sure he thought, the best player in the world. He came into the league when he was a teenager. I'm bigger than everybody. People say I could be good at it. Why can't I? Manix, your point to me is as important as anyone that'll be made over the 3 hours of this show. Is what makes the NBA to me so special today is you have a guy who's going to win an MVP who was born in Slovenia. You have a guy who won an MVP and is probably about to win another one who was born in Greece and is from Nigeria. You have a guy who might win an MVP one day who's from Cameroon, and a guy who I know is going to be on your MVP ballot, Pascal Siakam, who's also from Cameroon. That does not happen, I believe, without Kobe Bryant. He's not the only one. I'm not saying it's all him, but if you talk about human beings who has had the biggest impact on the NBA's global reach, Yao Ming is on that short list because of what he meant to the $1.5 billion in China. Kobe is on that list alongside Michael Jordan. Like, what they did, because you talk about the Dream Team, I mean, Giannis was not born. Luka was -7 when, the Dream Team for those guys, I'm older than all these guys, and I was 8 years old when the Dream Team happened. It was this era that made them fall in love with the game.
And Joel Embiid even said yesterday, when he was reacting to all of this, was watching Kobe in those 2010 NBA Finals that made him say, oh, I want to play basketball. I want to be like this guy. It seems almost unfair that he was taken from us so soon, way too soon, before he had a chance to do his second, third, fourth act that we all thought. Nick, we've been paying tribute to Kobe and his life for our entire show today. I want to give you a chance to give us your final thoughts.
One of them is very personal, and the other, I think, can apply to more. The personal one is I feel personally guilty for the manner in which I have always discussed Kobe. Listen, man, Kobe, because he was such an icon and he was always involved in these, some real, some media created rivalries, right? It was Kobe versus Shaq and you picked a side. I was a Shaq guy. It was Kobe versus Jordan. And I know people might not believe it, but I was a Jordan guy. It was Kobe versus LeBron. And I obviously was a LeBron guy. Up to and including, little did any of us know, 10 hours, 12 hours, 13 hours before this tragic accident when LeBron passed him. And I couldn't even manage just to, send out the tweet congratulating LeBron without a little bit of a dig, because it was a friendly sports rivalry. But in building one person up, I very often tear someone down. And you just fight in your head by, like, oh, it's sports. They're all, nobody really cares. But it was unnecessary. And then he's gone. And you look back on the career and you say, this is one of the greatest athletes ever. This is someone whose on-the-court resume rivals just about anyone and was building something off the court that was maybe going to rival or surpass any athlete off the court as far as winning the Oscar and what he was going to build. And it'll always affect me and fans who never met him because of the power of his ability, his personality, and the way he handled himself, especially this last phase of his career and life. And I still, when it says Kobe Bryant on the screen, Broussard, with the years, it still, to me, doesn't feel totally real that we are talking about Kobe Bryant in the past tense.
No, look, I'm with you. And for your first statement about being critical of Kobe, that's the analytics age. And analytics looks at Kobe Bryant's career, and he wasn't that efficient. You know, he shot the mid-range ball. And look, I don't care what your analytics say. This guy was one of the greatest to ever do it. And 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now, don't put all these guys with the great analytical numbers ahead of Kobe Bryant. All right, this dude was the truth, period. All right, secondly, I think I have full faith that the NBA will handle this the right way, and whatever they do will be great. And I will not be critical of them if they don't do this. I would love to see them retire both number 8 and number 24. And I haven't talked to anybody with the NBA about this. I don't know if they're thinking about it or it hasn't crossed their mind. But league-wide, I would like to see them retire number 8 and number 24. Major League Baseball retired Jackie Robinson's number, which obviously he, for a different reason. But the NBA, you've been making the point all day, all morning, Nick. We haven't seen an NBA superstar pass away like this in the prime of his life.
Listen, everyone that's ever won the MVP is still with us except for Wilt, who died 20 years ago, but he was older. Moses, who died suddenly, but rest in peace, Moses was 60. And now Kobe. Right. Every other one, MVP is still alive. So there is
right.
no precedent
so,
for this.
So I think that's appropriate to retire Kobe Bryant's number. I'd love to see the NBA do it.
And I just want to read one quote. It's from Showtime special he did in 2015. He said, there's a choice that we have to make as people, as individuals. If you want to be great at something, there's a choice you have to make. We all can be masters at our craft, but you have to make a choice. What I mean by that is there are inherent sacrifices that come along with that. Family time, hanging out with friends, being a great friend, being a great son, nephew, whatever the case may be. There are sacrifices that come along with making that decision. And the absolute cruel unfairness of this is Kobe knowingly made those sacrifices, believing I'm going to get that time back on the back end. I'm going to throw myself all into my daughter's lives. I'm going to do all these things. And that's what he was doing.
Right.
And that's what a lot of us who are really highly motivated career people do. It'll all be worth it. And you don't always have that time at the end. And to have that stolen from Kobe, from his daughter, and from the 7 other innocent people on that plane, it's unspeakably awful. And for those close to him, your just heart absolutely breaks for him.
It is so well said. Chris Broussard, thank you very much.
I couldn't have done it without you.
That is going to do it for us here this morning. We are going to be back here tomorrow morning. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.